Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Welcome to McKinney Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast. And for the first time in a hosting capacity, I'm your host, Nicole Thomas, Vice President of Information Services for McKinney Flavelle. Today's date is March 9th, 2018. And joining me from the happiest place on earth, Anaheim, California, is Michael Coughlin, the President of McKinney Flavelle. Hello, Mike.
Hello. Hello. Welcome. I'm having a great time down here in Anaheim at the Natural Products Expo, and I promise you, I'm not at Disneyland.
Well, there's a lot going on in the background, so I hope I don't hear babies screaming, so I'm going to assume you're telling me the truth then.
Yeah, I quite frankly, I'd rather be at the Natural Products Expo than at Disneyland. It's kind of weird if you don't have kids and you go there. So
Yeah, it makes you look just a little creepy. So yeah, probably better you're doing work than hanging out at Disneyland with toddlers. Just an idea. Well, Michael, as you mentioned, you're attending the Natural Products Show, and we'd love to hear a little bit about what's going on at that show and what trends are developing. And we'll wrap up the podcast with a quick recap of some of the changes in the WASDE report just yesterday. But for now, what's going on, Mike? What's happening at Natural Products?
Well, I tell you, I've been attending the show for about 15 years now, and a lot has changed over the years. You know, back then it was all smaller companies, the organic trend, and boy, today just a huge show, over 80,000 people.
Wow!
And I've seen a lot change over the years. So, a couple of things that I think are important that for those that can't attend the Natural Products Expo, but if you in the future you should. Because it really, this is the place where a lot of the trends come out of. And I think one of the things we've talked about a lot is the millennials. And a lot of the food companies trying to understand, how do I market to millennials and what types of foods do they want? And I would just have to say, going into this year, you know, a lot of new products that are, you know, being socially aware. Socially aware, smart, convenient food. You see a lot in the way of meats. So still with the trend of high quality, sustainable meats.
And actual meat. We're not talking vegan version meat, legitimate meat products, huh?
Yeah. 10 years ago it was tofu, but now it's actual meats, you know, and jerkies and things like that. Also a lot of seeds. Seed companies doing different packaged seeds. So protein in a convenient, it's like, again, it's a lot of its packaging down here. A lot of popcorn and sweet, savory treats. So something that is quick and on the go, healthy ingredients and sustainable is the big thing. And one of the things I saw over the last couple of years is non-GMO project verified everywhere.
Right.
And literally one year it was hardly anything. The next year it was on everybody's booth. Well, this year I still see it, but not as much.
Sure.
And maybe that's because the consumer already knows that they're doing it. But and I did see it. So I'm not saying I didn't see it, but certainly less a predominant thing at the booths.
Well, that would definitely be a hot topic over the next few months, I'm sure, with many of our listeners as we await the labeling requirements this summer.
Absolutely. But I think we've seen. I think the final thing I would say about this show to kind of recap it all up is that, hey, you know, food companies are understanding that millennials like to snack more.
Sure.
They believe it, and they want something that is socially responsible with a good, clean label, and something that's going to give them some energy until the next in the next 2 hours when they eat again.
Very, very interesting. You know, it's funny because you mentioned that, but it does seem that one of those big trends that has developed over the last few years is grazing and eating more smaller meals throughout the day. And I think you hit on it with the convenience and snacking particularly. It appears to be one of those things that the industry feels will really resonate with millennials, including a message and sort of a value to that food beyond just the food itself.
Exactly. So, you know, it's a great show, like I said, and anybody who hasn't been should go, especially if you're in marketing for any food company. This is the place to be. It's one of my favorite shows of the year. The mass size of it, a lot of, you know, and the other thing is there's a level a floor where it's just all people with the dream of making a food product. And there's nothing more exciting than that. Somebody has poured their heart, energy, and money
right
into something that they really believe in. And it's just really nice to see.
Well, you know, one more question along those lines, Mike, are you noticing, because it's been years since I've been out to the Natural Products Show. And I remember at that time, a lot of upstarts and sort of mom and pop companies. Are you noticing a continuation of that? Or yes, is the show being more attended by your larger sort of tried and true food manufacturers as well?
I would say both. Certainly a bigger presence of the large food and beverage companies. Mm-hmm. But I tell you, there's still a lot of small and medium sized players that are involved in this show. And it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, over 80,000 people. So it's a big one. I got to run.
Well, that sounds very interesting, Mike. A lot going on in the world of natural products. So, you know, give me an opportunity here to talk a little bit about what happened in yesterday's WASDE report. Let's start with soybeans and soybean oil. A few things worth mentioning. First, in terms of soybeans, the domestic ending stocks for 2017-18 were increased by 25 million bushels as a result of a reduction to expected export demand, now pegged at a little over 2.06 billion bushels. This was somewhat offset by higher crush, now projected at 1.96 billion bushels. So we might break a record this year if this strong pace continues. In the global market, no surprise in that Argentine production was lowered by 7 million metric tons to 47 million metric tons. With some offsets elsewhere, the ultimate impact was a nearly 4 million metric ton reduction to global ending stocks, now projected at 94.4 million metric tons, and that is lower than last year. For soybean oil, I'll just mention that as far as the domestic market is concerned, ending stocks were raised by 215 million pounds to 1.75 billion. This was a result of higher production, thanks to that upwardly revised soy crush projection, and a reduction in biodiesel usage of 300 million pounds. And that's something I'm definitely happy to see. Having been of the opinion, the number was a bit optimistic at 7.5 billion pounds. Now on to corn. And you know how the saying goes, when you're right, no one remembers, but when you're wrong, no one ever forgets. Well, no one likes an I told you so. And frankly, all of us analysts know we're just as often wrong as we are right. But I'll take this opportunity to point our listeners towards some podcasts that we did back towards the end of 2017, when we talked about the risk of chasing the corn market to the bottom. Now, in fairness, the market did push lower after that and has really been sideways trading for a while. But when you consider the WASDE revision that took yields up to almost 177 bushels per acre, and futures reacted by continuing to trade sideways, you got the feeling that the path of least resistance might be higher. And that's what we're starting to see with some seasonal strength in corn futures. A few notes about the corn balance sheet, as there were changes to the domestic market numbers. Ending stocks were lowered by 225 million bushels to 2.127 billion. Now, from a historical perspective, this would still be considered large ending inventories, but in a market that's been bearish and really sideways for a good chunk of this crop year, this will at least add some support to some folks' bullish feelings about the market that have emerged in the last few weeks. Now, the cause was a 175 million bushel increase to export demand and an additional 50 million bushels towards ethanol production. Regarding ethanol production, the expectation is for increasing profitability for ethanol manufacturers over the next couple of years. In 2017, production topped records again for the fifth consecutive year at about 15.8 billion gallons. Fixed operating costs are estimated somewhere around 35 cents a gallon for dry milk production. And end of the year inventories for 2017 were 4 million barrels higher than a year before. And also, there's some suggestion that there are discussions being held within Washington to consider increasing the mandatory ethanol blend to 15%. Now, obviously, that would certainly support greater usage of corn in upcoming crop years if that were to occur. Corn futures continue to trend seasonally higher. May futures are up by about 30 cents a bushel, or nearly 10% from the recent low posted back in January. Recent activity may be suggesting at least a temporary reprieve from bullish price action, with futures ending the day lower. But looking at the longer-term Fibonacci retracement picture, it seems futures could easily travel up to the $4 per bushel level before meeting any stiff resistance. And conversely, we could also see retracement back to around the $3.85 per bushel level without fresh bullish sentiment. And lastly, looking at those non-fundamental factors that can impact any of these grain and oilseed markets, politically, there's a lot of discussion about free trade, and obviously any retaliatory behavior will likely hit agricultural products, one of the areas for which we tend to have an inherent price advantage from a trade standpoint. And also keep an eye on the stock market. It's been a hell of a bull run for at least 6 years now, and when you look at these charts, it's starting to feel a little heavy. And that's being echoed with more and more of the analysts on the equity side of things suggesting that we could be in for a significant market correction in the near term. And why is that relevant to our markets? Well, non-commercials have been starting to come back into ag markets, and looking at the soy complex, looking at cocoa, and of course, looking at corn, these markets had sizable short positions just a few months ago that seem to be reversing. Definitely something to monitor and keep in mind, those specs tend to have more of an effect on the upside than they do the downside. And lastly, very quickly here, let's talk a little bit about sugar. Only two major changes on the domestic front. First, a 10,000 short ton raw value increase to cane sugar production. And you want to talk about a resilient crop. The cane production areas have endured everything from dry conditions at times to too much rain at times to hurricanes to snow and freezes. Yet we're still looking at a crop above last year by about 4%. The more pertinent change was a new projected stocks to use value of 15.5%. That's up by almost a full percentage point from the February report. And what pushed it higher was a 150,000 metric ton increase to the other program category, i.e. additional re-exports. That's in line with what we saw last year, and is certainly being helped by what has been an extended time frame with a wide spread between the number 11 and number 16 sugar futures. Probably more newsworthy, however, is the current picture for deliveries versus the USDA projection. Now, USDA has deliveries pegged at 12.325 million short tons raw value, a 1.8% increase over 16-17. That may not be too far off. Conservatively, we could see deliveries up year on year somewhere between 1 and 1.5%. But deliveries have been slow thus far, only up by about 0.3% for the first 4 months of the marketing year. Now, we do have to consider the impact of the weather thus far this year, which may be giving a false impression of weakness. So time will tell. And also worth mentioning which categories are demonstrating the highest increase in deliveries, some of which increased by double digits. For example, multiple use is up by 41.6%, a small category, but up pretty significantly. Hotels, restaurants, and institutions as a category up by about 17.3%. And also higher were deliveries to confectioners, up 7.5%, retail up 5.6%, and ice cream / dairy up about 2%. Now, on the flip side, deliveries were lower for a few categories, including bakery and cereal, beverages, and wholesale grocers by 2.1%, 2.3%, and 8.9%, respectively. So that's what the numbers show. And we'll continue to monitor this and share our ideals with you as time goes on. Now, somewhere along the way, we lost Mike, and I think he ran off to get back to that Mickey Mouse picture and get over to Disneyland. So with that, I'm going to wrap up our podcast today, giving everyone a heads up. If you haven't already, be sure to take a look at registering for our upcoming spring seminar in April. Going to be a great time. Coverage of a lot of commodity markets, even some of those that you don't typically hear about from the McKinney-Flavelle side of things, with a few guest speakers. So that should be great. Plus, on top of that, we're offering up our happy hour after the event. So, I mean, hey, learn a lot about the markets and get free booze. Who could say no to that? So on that note, I will wish everyone adieu. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch up with you next week, this time at the Snacks Expo in Atlanta, Georgia. Thank you. Have a great day.
That concludes this podcast episode. For more information, visit us on the web at bikini-favel.com. Also follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter for the latest industry news, updates, and intelligence.